Do not let your hearts be troubled. These are the opening words of Jesus in today's gospel. Do not let your hearts be troubled. He's speaking to his disciples at what we now refer to as the Last Supper, his last night on earth. They didn't know it, but he knew it. If anyone had a right to feel troubled that night, it was Jesus himself. He's in the heart of Jerusalem. The city is in turmoil over him. The tensions are very high. There have already been a number of attempts to kill him. It's a very troubling moment. Sometimes it's good to think about what's troubling others so that we get perspective on our own troubles. But here Jesus, setting aside any concern for himself, addresses his closest disciples. He knows that their hearts are troubled. Why? Because they're in Jerusalem too. They're with him. The threats against him also threaten them. They are afraid. They are confused. Now, that's what the apostles were experiencing. But since we are here reading this gospel today, May 2023, we hear Jesus say this to us as well. Do not let your hearts be troubled. He knows that very often our hearts are troubled. All sorts of things can disturb us or distract us or frighten us. Financial problems, difficulties in marriage, health concerns, or the classic description that the Bible uses, wars, famines, plagues. Even the weather can leave our hearts troubled, right? I mean, here we are, we're passing through a very severe heat wave these days, and that's draining enough, just on the physical level. But then there's talk about El Nino phenomenon and the imminent water shortage and the possibility of a power crisis. And then even beyond that, there's concern about climate change and what we can do about it. Okay, well, what's troubling your heart? What tends to disturb you, even if maybe you're not troubled right now, but you know the sorts of things that make your heart troubled. Any of the things I just mentioned, or more personal things. Very often when I speak to people, what's troubling them is their own sins. Things that they've done that they deeply regret. They can't undo, they can't unsay. It's really troubling. Or they might be facing temptations that they feel they can't resist. Or perhaps it's depression or sadness or fear. There's all sorts of things. Okay. Well, Jesus already knows about this. He knows what is troubling our hearts, and he says to us, do not let your hearts be troubled. Now, that statement by itself does not resolve our problems. That's like when people say, don't worry or don't feel bad. Well, that doesn't work. We have to have a reason not to feel bad. Otherwise, we still feel bad or we're still troubled. Now, when it comes to Jesus, we typically think that Jesus should simply solve the very problem that is troubling us. Of course. If we're out of money, we say, well, if the Lord would just give me more money, I would be okay. And so we say, Lord, heal my daughter or heal my brother or my loved one, and I'll be happy. That's what's troubling me. Just give me a better job. Or give me a better marriage, or give me a new air conditioner, and I'll be happy. My heart won't be troubled anymore. So sometimes that's the focus of our prayers. We ask God for things, and we should ask him for things. That's not wrong. Jesus himself tells us, pray, give us this day our daily bread. So we should be asking the Lord for things. Yes. But he also has something much more in mind than we do. And that's why he doesn't simply do what we ask. Listen to his answer here. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You have faith in God, have faith also in me. He places himself in the middle of our troubles. For he invites us to place him in the middle of our troubles. Have faith in me. Well, we might ask, what does faith have to do with what's troubling us? It doesn't seem connected to a lot of people. And so Jesus goes on to explain, he's going to prepare a place for us, and he will come back and get us. This is what he says, I will come back again and take you to myself, so that where I am, you also may be. See what Jesus does here. Rather than change our current circumstances, he invites us to change our whole way of seeing. We tend to be too narrow. We tend to be too limited. We tend to focus on what is troubling us. We think of what's on our minds right now. Maybe this has always been a human tendency, but our access to the social communications media, I think, makes it worse, because we can so easily get caught up in whatever happens to be the breaking news of the moment, or the leading story of the moment, or whatever happens to go viral at the moment. Oh, the coronation of King Charles. Great. Oh, the NBA playoffs. Great. What about the school schedules? What about the tensions with China? What about the drought? Whatever. Now, these might all be important, and maybe they are. But Jesus is talking about something much more important. He's not playing down these things, but he's talking about something more. You know, the big questions are very, very rarely addressed in the media, and not often talked about either. In fact, we ourselves might ignore them most of the time. The big questions: why are we here? What are we supposed to do? Where are we going? What's the meaning of life? It doesn't matter who the King of England is. It doesn't matter who the champion team is. Not ultimately. It doesn't matter if we don't know who we are or what we're doing or where we're going. So Jesus says he's going to prepare a place for us, and he's going to take us to this place. He's not talking about an earthly place. He's not talking about going to the mountains, to go to Baguio. He's not talking about going to the beach or somewhere. He's talking about heaven. He's talking about a more than earthly place, a beyond earthly place, a heavenly place, union with God. He's talking about joy. He's talking about fulfillment, peace. Now, that's great, except we don't really know what that means, especially when we're troubled. Now, Thomas, in this gospel, speaks up for all of us, and he says, okay, we understand you're talking about something good, but we don't really know what you're talking about, and we don't know how to get there, so just show us the way. Show us the way. And Jesus responds with his famous line, I am the way and the truth and the life. I am the way and the truth and the life. Why is this such an important and famous line? Because here Jesus is revealing who he is and how he fits into our life, into our troubled life, and how he himself is the answer to whatever is troubling us. It's an extraordinary thing for anybody to say. How can someone say, I am the way, I am truth? I am truth, I am life. Who does he think he is? Someone might ask, well, who does he think he is? I'm truth. It's one thing for a person to speak the truth or to point out the truth or to discover the truth, but he says, I am the truth. So either Jesus is the middle of everything. He places himself at the center of everything. He places himself, he proclaims himself as the answer. Either he's the most self-centered, egotistical person who ever lived, or he is God incarnate, the Savior of the world, the answer. He is either the answer or he's no answer at all. No, but the truth is, he is the answer. He is the Savior of the world. He is the way to the Father. He is the answer to what troubles us. So we need to focus much more on him and on what he has in mind for us, and much less on ourselves and our troubles. When troubles overcome us, the key is not to focus on the troubles, but to bring them to Jesus Christ. Let me conclude by turning to the second reading, because St. Peter gives us a very helpful image here. I think it will help us understand Jesus as the way, the truth, and the life. And we have to use images because we're talking about something that's beyond this world. Last week, we used the image of the Good Shepherd. Remember that? Well, this week, St. Peter says Jesus is a living stone who is the cornerstone of the spiritual house, God's house. And we are called to be living stones built upon him, built upon Christ, into this spiritual building. Now, we don't know what a spiritual building is. We don't know what it should look like. We don't know what we should do as living stones. But we do know that we have a cornerstone. That's Jesus Christ. We do know we have a secure foundation. We have a trustworthy resting place or starting point or a solid criterion for all that we do and all that we think, all that we hope for. That's Jesus Christ. That's Jesus, the way, the truth, and the life. He's the key to our union with God. He's the one who makes our sometimes very troubling life's journey into a fruitful and joyful pilgrimage to the house of the Father. So do not let your hearts be troubled. If you have Jesus Christ, you can understand why this message is worthwhile. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Let us put our trust in him. Let us talk with him, pray to him, let us follow him. Peter says, come to him, a living stone. Come to Jesus Christ. Let's put our faith, our hope, our trust in Jesus Christ, the Lord.